Now, now we can do some talk about some meditation, learning how to be calm and peaceful. And because I haven't been here a while, I've been traveling, and because many of you are getting old, I think I can repeat the same stories in the knowledge you would have forgotten them by now. It's true. But so first of all, just I'll pick up this bottle of urine. Well, look. No, don't remember. Just even Jesus would be able to turn water into wine. So I do. I do a more fancy. Okay, very good. Sorry about that. Anyway. Okay, very good. Okay, what's that? At the airport.
Joke number one.
At the airport, there was this fellow, you know, got in front of me, and he got checked with his baggage. And when he got checked, you know, they opened up the stuff, and there, right underneath the bottom, under the jumpers and the jacket, you know what was there? It's a bottle of Johnny Walker whiskey, undeclared. So the customs officer said, "What's that, sir?" And he said, "Oh, look. I just was on pilgrimage in France to the holy city of Lourdes. It's Lourdes water. It's good for your health. Holy water." And he said, "Why has it got the title Johnny Walker on the outside, the label?" He said, "Well, I had to put in something. It's just a bottle which I just had at the time, you know, Johnny Walker." And customs officers are often not the most people who believe you so easily. He said, "Let's check this out." And he opened up the bottle top and said, "This isn't water. Smell it yourself." And the traveller said, "Oh my goodness, you're right. It's whiskey. Another miracle." I know that's an old joke, but it's been a long time since I told it. So hopefully you've forgotten it. So anyway, it hasn't happened yet, thank goodness. But anyway, back to the story. Okay, now, the whole idea of learning how to meditate is to get this water nice and still, so you can be at peace. And to be able to be at still, there's no way anyone could actually hold a bottle of water perfectly still. Every time which you hold it, it will always be moving. And there's no way you can concentrate or be mindful and allow this to be perfectly still. There's only one way, and it's so easy to let this be still, and that is to put it down, to let it go. And when you put it down and you let it go, then you will find, with a little bit of patience, that will become peaceful all by itself. Because that's its nature, that's the default state of the mind when you stop trying to control it. You let it be, and then it becomes still, like it is right now. Now that is, in a nutshell, how we meditate. We just stand back, as it were, and we just watch these moments go by without getting involved or entangled in them. We put them down. Because I travel around a lot, I watch all these people watching the in-flight movies, and I can't believe just how emotional they get. Sometimes there's some movie about some monster, I think it used to be when I was young, some monsters, and then they got Transformers, and then they got vampires, and then they got zombies. I don't know what the next one is going to be. Maybe, who knows? Monks. No, we're just probably too kind. So, But I always notice that people are on the edge of their seats. The monster's going to come and get somebody. And I remember the movie which I saw as a student. It was called Tarantula. And the tarantula was a poor little spider who was involved in a nuclear accident and mutated until this monster about 20 times the size of an ordinary, and probably more than that, because it was bigger than a human being, and would stalk and eat people. But one thing I did notice, and apparently it hasn't changed much, the tarantulas, the monsters, would only stalk and attack beautiful young girls and the guys who try to protect them. If you're old and fat, you are safe. The tarantula is not interested in you. Check it out, apparently it's true. But anyway, I won't go there anymore. But I remember being in the movie house, you know, like 45 years ago now, and the tarantula was after this beautiful girl. And you know what? Somebody in the movie house said, "Look out behind you, tarantula's coming." They're crazy. They can't hear you. But that's what people do. And they get so emotionally sad when the hero dies. Oh, it's so sad. You start crying. Just like I remember when I was a young man, when I had girlfriends. Then we took the girlfriends with my mates to watch West Side Story. Remember West Side Story? And the very, very end. This, like Tony, he was Italian. And Maria, she was Puerto Rican. And it was a match, a love match, which was doomed from the start. But they gave it everything they've got. They really loved each other. And one thing happened to another, and I think it was Maria's brother was going to shoot Tony. And she was looking for him, trying to find him in the streets of the West Side in New York. Actually, I was there a week or two, a week ago. But I checked this out, and you know, it's amazing, just these movies are just totally false. Because as Maria finally found Tony, he was under a lamppost in the rain. It was, and as she shouted out to him, "Tony, look out!" And at that moment, Maria's brother shot Tony. And Maria ran to the lamppost and hugged him as he was dying. And then there was an orchestra somewhere in the middle of the night in the poorest part of New York, and they started playing, "There's a place for us somewhere, place for us." And she died in his arms. And all our girlfriends, you know, went to a group of guys and girls, and all our girlfriends started crying and weeping. We started laughing. Guys being guys. It was a matter. You know, it's only a movie. And anyway, for anyone who doesn't believe in reincarnation, wait for another half an hour and Tony gets reincarnated, doesn't he? Back to where he started from. But don't just get into the guys with this, because I'm going to not tell too many stories, otherwise I don't teach about meditation, but it's part of meditation, so. Guys are the same when they're watching the footy. "That was a foul! Referee! Send them off, or give them a red card, or award a penalty." Have you ever seen your guys doing that? They're watching football, and the football's over east in Melbourne somewhere.
Yesterday.
Yeah, yesterday you saw it. And you remind them, look, that's happening 3,000 kilometres away. They can't hear you in Melbourne, no matter how loud you shout. But why do people do that? It's because they get emotionally entangled in the actions. And they forget, when you're actually watching that movie, it's like you get pulled in. It is like you're on the New York, in the West Side. When you get involved in the soccer match or the footy match, it's like you're actually there, you know, in the ground. You imagine that. That's the psychology of it, which is why you react so well. And that is, understanding that is the understanding how all this emotional turmoil, it's okay to be mindful, aware of it, but sometimes you get pulled into it. And it's like, you know, it's real. The fantasies, the thoughts, the projections which you have are actually your life. And you overreact. that is what we learn not to do when we meditate. We're not just aware of what's going on, but we actually stand back a little bit. Imagine yourself standing back when you're watching a movie or football match, feeling the sofa. I'm at home. There are no tarantulas in my home. At least not any mutant tarantulas. Then you find this, you have the choice. You can get involved if you want and just, you know, get emotionally high or sad, whatever you want to do. But you know the escape if you need to. You can just stand back and realize this too will pass. It's not that real. You're getting involved in it far too much. You stand back, and it's much easier when you see a bigger picture to not overreact to whatever is happening. So you're aware, but you imagine yourself standing back a little bit. And then, when you're standing back, you know, from the action, from the movie, you find you don't get entangled. So you can laugh if you wish to, you can cry if you wish to, you can get afraid if you wish to, you can be peaceful if you wish to, but you're not really involved. You can actually detach, put it down, and see how still this water is. Nice and nice and peaceful. So easy to do when you don't try. You leave things alone. And the other little story better do this afterwards. So when we meditate, we sit down, we close our eyes, and we just let go. So sometimes people say, but my mind goes crazy if I let it go. Well, let it go. There, I've got to tell the story because this is important. There was a mother over here in Perth, and she said her little kid, only 6 years of age, threw a tantrum at home and said, "Mummy, I don't love you anymore, I want to leave home." Now this mother was incredibly smart. I really admire her wisdom, because she said, "Okay, darling, I'll help you pack." Instead of arguing with the kid, help him pack. So he went to the... Wanted to leave home. Went to the bedroom. Packed all the important things in life for the kid. I think in this particular case it was a Spider-Man suit. And teddy bear. And other stuff. Which is, you know, just what you would pack if you were going overseas for a few days. But anyway. Then went to... Before you go, darling, I'll give you a sandwich. So made a favourite sandwich, put it in a paper bag, gave it to the kid, and the kid went off onto his life, walked down the little path to the garden gate, turned around and went down the road. Bye bye, have a wonderful life. What happened next? The child only got about maybe 20 metres, 30 metres down the road and started feeling homesick. Oh, I miss... Because the mum was very kind to them, giving them a nice sandwich and a nice send-off, and came around, went into the garden gate, down the door, down the path, and the mother hadn't moved. "Welcome home, darling." True story. And there's a similar one happened in Singapore, and that was when they didn't give them a lunch, they just gave them $20, find your own lunch. People are busy in Singapore. It's true. But, and they didn't go down the garden path, they just went down the elevator, the lift, down to the bottom, got homesick and pushed the button for the floor on which they lived and came back. "Mum hadn't moved. Welcome home, darling." There's a lot of psychology in that, especially for meditation. If your mind wants to go off, "Bye-bye, darling. Have a wonderful time, mind." And if you're kind to your mind, it will always come back to you and stay with you. Don't try and control it and discipline it. That's one of the reasons why it runs away. Be kind to it. "Okay, mind, you want to fall asleep, it's because you're tired. Okay, mind, you want to go think about something, okay, off you go think about it. When you come back, let us know." That is very gentle. It's called letting go. And you find it works. For many years as a monk, I was taught how to, your mind wanders off, bring it back. Mind wanders off, bring it back. Mind wanders off, bring it back. And that was just endless. And it was also too aggressive. I said, why does my mind wander off? Because I don't love it. I'm too hard on it. Because, you know, I'm just trying to control it all the time. So when I became a good friend to my mind, a really good friend, when I learned how to open the door of my heart to my mind, whatever it was, then my mind stayed with me. We got to know each other and understand each other. And that's called meditation and wisdom. Learning how to make peace. You don't make peace by making war. So, a very quick type of meditation, which I've been teaching a lot these days, is the little story about the Emperor's Three Questions. Many of you know that story, but I will just get to the heart of it. When is the most important time?
Yeah.
Why? Because now's the only time you have. Now's where your future's being made. Now's the only time you can do anything about anything. So now's the most important time. And what's the most important thing to do?
Care.
To care, yeah. Be kind. You try and cure things, you make them worse. You're kind to them, and they tend to heal. I remember my mother, whenever I would play soccer in the streets and fall on the ground, scraping the skin off my knees, she'd kneel down and kiss them better. And the pain would always go away, every time. Just that kindness was just so important. So caring heals, both physical and emotional. Try to get rid of things makes them worse. And in the Emperor's Three Questions, who's the most important person?
Person in front.
Excellent. So what is the most important thing to be observe or watch when you're meditating? Whatever's in front of you right now. Whatever it is. With no distinction or judging. So if you're asleep, that's the most important thing in the world. Be asleep. If your mind is wandering, wherever it wanders, go with it. Hold its hand with kindness and see where it ends up. Be kind to your mind. Don't try and control it or stop it. Don't hate your mind or train your mind. If you do, you just get more tense. There was a fellow who went to the psychologist. This is bad joke number two. Come here. And he went to his psychiatrist and said, sometimes I'm like a teepee, like a wigwam. And other times it's like I'm a marquee. And he said, well, I've never heard that problem before. So sometimes you imagine you're a teepee, like one of those Red Indian wigwams, and sometimes you think you're a marquee. So yeah. Ah, I know your problem. You're too tense. The emergency door has been indicated. If you want to leave now, get out before it gets worse. So, but you groaned, but I can guarantee you're going to tell that to your friends tomorrow and torture them as well, you unkind. Anyway, now, so you're kind to your mind, and then it stays with you. Even somebody was telling me just recently, they had this dog who was, they found this dog in the pound, and it was about to be euthanized. So they sort of got it and they brought it home. And it was always really sort of aggressive, would never do anything properly, would even try and bite them. And so they, instead of trying to train it, they said, okay dog, whatever you want to do. And they were so kind to it. And that dog just within a day just, you know, started to relax and just eat its food and not be upset or aggressive at anybody. The power of kindness is huge. So, be kind to your mind. And then you find that your mind will slow down and stay with you. You'll be your friend, not your enemy. Trouble is we make enemies of so many things in our emotional world. We make friends with them. We're not afraid of them. And then we find everything settles down. just like that little piece of water over there. Let it be. So anyway, this is what we do with our body, with our mind, and then we get nice and peaceful and happy, and meditation is so easy because the only things we do, now the most important time, whatever's in front of you right now, whatever emotion, feeling, it's important. Respect it and be kind to it, care for it, and you'll find everything settles down and becomes incredibly peaceful. That's very easy meditation, but very powerful. So I teach monks, teaching all over the place, so it works, otherwise I wouldn't be invited out. So let's give it a try. Here we go. Okay, I'm just going to take just a drink of your wine. I trust it. Yeah, hey, you're. I know. Come on. I'm sure you thought I was going to say that sooner or later. Okay, we've got Christ. Very good. So, sitting down. Close your eyes, and with your eyes closed you can bring all of your attention to your body. It's one less distraction. Now, what are you aware of right now? Whatever it is, it's important. If you're cold, if you're hot, if there's an ache, if there's a sound disturbs you, don't try and get rid of it, because it's here, it's teaching you something. Now's the most important time, the only time you have. Don't have any sort of goals or what you want to achieve, where you want to get. That just is like more work, more stress. So no goals, no place to go except to be here. Now is the most important time. What are you aware of right now? Whatever that is, whatever's in front of your mind is the most important thing in the whole world. Know what to do. Open the door of your heart to this moment, this feeling, my sound of my voice, feelings in the body. And care. Like I said, with that beaker of water, you just put it down. You care for it. And if you're in this moment, and whatever you're aware of is right in front of you, is what you're aware of, we call that not just mindfulness, but unconditional mindfulness. Just aware, without choosing what you're going to be aware of, without struggling and stressing, which is when you try and control and choose and get rid of. You're here right now, whatever's right here, and you care for it. If it's your body you're aware of, which is very often in the beginning, because the body is itchy, achy, hot, cold. Caring means sometimes moving. Meditating doesn't mean like you're training to be one of those soldiers in front of Buckingham Palace who never moves. Caring means if there's an itch, you scratch it. As long as it's your own itch, not the person sitting next to you, that is. If you need to adjust the body, adjust it. Mindfulness and kindness. Kindfulness. And the awareness, the mindfulness gives you the feedback. You see how things are going. Is your body feeling more comfortable? More relaxed? Being in this moment and caring for it. just as you'd care for a plant if you're growing in the garden. Not forcing it to grow, just protecting it, nurturing it, and being patient. It grows by itself. So you can imagine you're that flower. Tiny little flower, only a couple of inches, not yet really matured, grown. Tiny little flower, you need to nurture it. So you look at that little flower, which is you, and you really care for it. Make sure it's well watered, protected. And little by little, you find a tiny little flower grows into a beautiful bloom, all by itself. You're in this moment, it's important, and you care. So if you are aware of the body, sometimes I encourage people to notice, which happens automatically, but it's just saying to do what is going to happen anyway, is to notice any part of the body which is irritating or painful. It's the irritating, painful stuff which usually come up into your mind. What things which are a problem? Just be aware of it. It's important. There's much we have to learn from this. So, treat whatever this is, ache or pain, irritation, as important. It's happening now. We care for it. Just like a mother loving her child. Protecting, nurturing. Smiling at this moment. If you get more tense, it means it's not really compassion, it's not kindness. One thing about awareness in this moment, you learn sometimes by trial and error, but by feedback, what relaxes you and what makes you more tense. You learn by putting down the problem, by opening the door of your heart to this moment, real kindness, real compassion, real love. You find that that relaxes. Tightness, the tension in your body gets relieved. This is not theory, you can feel it. So let the mindfulness notice the tightest part of your body, the one which aches. Let it be. See if it can relax, open up. The irritation or even pain gets less and less and less and less. Real kindness, real compassion, real metta. You know it. Because it eases things. It takes a problem and it diminishes it until it fades, disappears. So I'm just naturally being aware of my body and relaxing it to the max, just through kindness. You deserve kindness. Imagine you're the thing which is looking at you, just like the most compassionate, kind being you've ever met. Imagine that looking on you, not asking anything of you, respecting you as you are. You don't need to change. You're just being. find your body relaxes, your mind starts to be calm when you stop fighting. And again, what are you aware of right now? This is the meditation. Don't think the meditation is getting somewhere or achieving lights or floating in the air. It's being right here with what you have. Now is the only time you have. This right now is the most important object to be aware of. And you care for it. Not trying to cure it, but care for it. You're so peaceful, so relaxed, so still. Quite naturally, when you start to feel the stillness, the kindness, you don't need to think. You don't need to take notes in your mind. All that thinking and worrying is a result of the lack of kindness and lack of stillness. Be with how you feel. And you can imagine your heart like a circle. And you expand that circle wider and wider. There's some things we always keep outside we don't like. When we expand that circle, more things can be included. And you're at peace, you're not fighting. They drew a circle which pushed me out. Heretic, no good, someone to flout. But kindness and wisdom had the wit to win. I drew a bigger circle which included everything here. That's called kindness. Opening the door of your heart wider and wider. And finding peace in whatever is happening now. When you do feel peace, get to know her like a good friend, and then she'll be with you whenever you need her. If you don't recognize peace, she may come and you just walk straight by. Be careful. Peace, stillness are very shy. If you tell their name, they run away. So shh. Just let peace come, let kindness come, and then it stays. And again, if you need to adjust your posture or cough or sneeze, most welcome to. Don't need to be a statue to be peaceful.
some of you might notice, you become aware of your breathing. It's just natural. Don't go looking for it. It comes to you. Just breathe in, breathe out. Just like watching the waves on a beach, coming up the shore and ebb away again. Just breath bringing oxygen into your body and taking out all the carbon dioxide, all the waste products. Just breathing in, breathing out. No force. Just letting it be. Whatever's in front of you right now is the most important in the whole world. Your job is just to care. Don't try and change yourself. That's what other people do. That's what you've got all your life. Just learn to be at peace with this. To care, not to cure. Quiet now. I think I've brainwashed you enough for the next 10 or 15 minutes. When the meditation is about to end, I'll just give you the word. quite close to the end of the meditation time now. What's happening in your mind right now? It's important, whatever it is, we learn from it. Make peace with it. It's happening right now. Don't judge, but to care. Care for this moment. Care for your mind. Respect it. You find you already have peace. Freedom is being happy to be here. Prison is wanting to be somewhere else. Going to ring the gong 3 times as usual. When the gong finishes sounding for the 3rd time, you can come out from the meditation. Only trouble is I've got no gong. Okay. Gong. 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 Got to get the gong. Where's the gong gone? We've got a gong seat. Where's the gong? Oh, it's over there. Too far to reach. Okie dokie. Going, going, gong. There you go. So, how was that today? Okay. Sometimes people fight too much in life, they fight too much in their meditation, and they never find peace. So it's wonderful just learning how to be. And what shall I talk about tonight?
Anxiety.
Okay, what anxiety is, in brief, is looking at the future with a negative mind. There's in 2 days' time, the Cancer Wellness Association are coming again to Bodhinyana, to the monastery down the road. They always come every year, and I go to their place once a year for 27 years now. I've been going there. And it was only about last year they actually told me why. Well, they kept inviting me over there. And it was about 26 years ago. There was one of their clients. This was like, not like the Cancer Foundation, it's a Cancer Wellness Association and a Cancer Support Association that's been partnered with Solaris. And just to give it a little bit more extra, you know, just in the medical stuff for cancer. And that's so, I was brought up as a scientist, and the, one of the my friends who was a GP at the time, he said that when he, shouldn't say this in the hospital, but here we go, when he started medical school in Sydney, the professor, I think at Royal Prince Alfred Hospital in Sydney, who was just been in the business all his life, was about to retire, and he was the head of the hospital. So he welcomed the new intake of med students. With the wonderful words, as a great scientist, he said, 50% of what we're going to teach you in the next 4 years is wrong. My problem is I don't know which 50% it is. That's brilliant. So it's always that work in progress science. And people who say they know everything, that's just their arrogant. And so what we do know is just to learn that the, again, what I was saying about the kindness is really, really something very, very important. You know, in medicine, and also the attitudes, and that was something which was, you know, Cancer Wellness Association realized was important,
not just, you know, the science stuff, the medical stuff, you know, the doctors do that stuff, but something a little bit more. And so there was this woman, she had breast cancer, she had recovered, she was in full remission, but that wasn't the end of the story, because she had such anxiety and fear, what would happen if he came back? And that was just such a strong anxiety and fear that, you know, she, you know, was no peace in her life. And those people who have been through a cancer, it is a tough battle. If you survive, you learn a lot, but it's not the pleasantest of things to go through. But she did it. But what she thought afterwards, I don't think I can go through this again. And so she was so anxious, what happens if the cancer comes back? And she'd been to lots of psychologists and psychiatrists and stuff, and they couldn't solve the problem. And this weirdo in a bald head and a brown robe turns up, and she asked me that question, and I answered it straight away. Yeah, what happens if it didn't come back? And that shocked her, because so obvious, but she'd been focusing on what would happen if it comes back, never even thinking of the possibility, what would happen if it didn't come back. And that was it. She got it straight away. And now the cancer never came back, but she keeps coming back every year. And it taught her, as I'd like to share with you, that anxiety and fear is looking into the future, even the next moment, and thinking what might go wrong. What might go wrong? What might go wrong? Instead of looking what might go right, which is usually far more likely. So that's the first thing about sort of anxiety and fear, is actually sometimes we get into this habit. It's like brainwashing, just it's our culture of, you know, always looking into the negative. And of course, you know, one of my favorite stories, which you've heard an umpteenth times, but it's really applicable, the old two bad bricks in the wall story. It just shows you just how just the way we look can actually, you know, change the way that we deal with these problems and actually solves the problems. But it was very important for me, because down at Serpentine, where we live, there was we never had any money when we started. Now I'm fat. I was really thin in those days, as you know, you remember me, yeah, really, really thin. And
too thin,
yeah, I was exploited, you know, if I got photos of those, I could sue you guys, the way I was treated. But anyway, I didn't mind, it's good fun. So we, no money, had to build something, and I had to learn how to be a bricklayer, the first time. I was a theoretical physicist before, and now a bricklayer. Totally different trade. One is in the head, the other one's, you know, in your hands. So it's not easy. If anyone's laid any bricks here, they're never, you put the cement down, these bricklayers, you'll watch them, it's so easy. You do it yourself and it's never level. One end is too high, so you tap it down, the other end goes up, you tap that one down, it goes out of line, you tap that one and the first end is high again. Just those bricks just got no respect for monks. But anyhow, you got time, your patience, so you laid all the bricks, and perfectionist. And this is one of the things which people keep making mistakes at, trying to be perfectionist, not understanding what perfection is. But anyway, I'll come to that later on. Every brick had to be perfect, and I made sure they were perfect before I went on. So if a brick was not right, take it off, start again. Took a long time, but I wasn't being paid, so who cares? When I finished my first brick wall, like you do, you stand back to admire your handiwork. My first wall, oh my God, I'd missed two bricks. And to this day, I don't understand how that could have happened. I was really careful. Sam, to you, made a mistake. How did that happen? And these bricks were really crooked, and they spoiled the whole wall so badly that I was ashamed. I'd stuffed up. And to show you how ashamed I was, in those days we would get some visitors, and I'd always volunteer to be their guide, take them around. so I could take them somewhere else so they couldn't see my stupid wall. I was so ashamed of it. And also, honestly, I woke up in the middle of the night a few times, nightmares. You'd be dreaming of your wall, which was so bad. And we're trying to get done. These were people's money, and I'd wasted it. And the monk who was with me at the time, remember him, Ajahn Chakra? I was with him a couple of weeks ago.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
Had a nice time. I'll send you some photos later on.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Anyway, in Chicago. So he's Italian, that's where Italians live, I think, isn't it? You can get a job there, yeah. I don't like your job. But anyway, where was I with other wall, yeah. And so, wake up in the middle of the night, nightmare. Yeah, just as you do, because you're obsessed about these things. And I asked this, my senior monk, can we please buy some dynamite?
What?
To blow it up, so I can start again. Well, it's a bulldoze and push it over, so I can get rid of my mistakes, so no one could see him, I could start again. But we could not afford that. I was stuck with my wall. And every time I went past it, that was all I saw. My two eyes went to those two bad bricks every time. And I was so ashamed, so disappointed in myself, the big mistake I'd made. Until one day a visitor was with me, and they saw that wall, and they said, that's a beautiful wall. I said to them, are you blind? Or probably, are you visually impaired? Have you left your spectacles in the car? And what they said to me is the essence of the story. They said, yeah, I can see those two bad bricks, but I can also see the 998 perfect bricks as well. And you know, that hit me like a brick. Because for 3 months, I just could not see the 998 good bricks. I was blind to them. Every time I thought of them, my mistakes. Every time I dreamt of them, my mistakes. Every time I saw them, you went to your faults all the time. And that gentleman, I don't know who he is, but great person, that he taught me there's more bricks to the left, the right, above and below than your mistakes. And then, the next part of that story was when, again, that Cancer Support Association over in Cottesloe, I told that story there, and a builder came up to me, and he said, great story, but I want to reassure you, all bricklayers make mistakes. They all lay crooked bricks from now and again. But, he said, I will let you into a secret. And, another book, The Secret. That's not the secret. This is the secret. He said, when in the building industry we make a mistake, we tell our clients it's a feature. And we charge them an extra $3,000 for it. Now that's the secret, because mistakes, they're the features of life, and they make life far more valuable and precious, the mistakes of life. And so that makes things real, beautiful, the human, which is why I do the next little story, which you've heard umpteen times as well. But if you think that there's something crooked in you, wrong with you, especially if you are damaged goods. And I told this story first of all. It was actually in one of those seminars in the convention centre in Perth for clients of the mental health industry. Not for the people who teach, but for the people on the receiving end. I remember this woman came up to me afterwards. And she said, I apologise, because when I first saw you coming in here, I thought, who is this, please excuse me, who is this wanker coming in to teach us? That's what she said. Well, just, you have never seen a monk before. People think like that sometimes. But then she said, I apologise for that thought, because you made me cry. And the story which really sort of got to her heart was, I asked everybody to go for a walk. No, not during my talk. Go for a walk in a forest somewhere. And when you go for a walk in a forest, find your favourite tree. for the one which you like the most, and you will find it's not dead straight. It hasn't got all the branches in place, it hasn't got perfect green leaves, and it's got all these bumps on the bark. The most beautiful tree in the forest is the one which is twisted, crooked, and damaged. Check it out. And so if whoever you think there's something wrong with you, that you're crooked, you're twisted, you're damaged, number one, you belong just like every tree in the forest. And number two, you're probably the most beautiful tree in that forest, the more crooked and twisted you are. So if you've got a boyfriend or a husband who's crooked and twisted,
he's gorgeous.
If you've got a wife who's damaged goods, oh, that makes her lovable. What we're doing here, we're changing our sort of learned, habituated ideas of perfection and changing it to something realistic, just like I had to change my idea of a perfect wall having laid two bad bricks and realizing they are features. And that no one, even professional bricklayers, makes a perfect wall. And they're much more important. That takes away some of the cause, for anxiety, trying to be so perfect. You learn that at school, trying so hard to be good, trying so hard to get the questions right. And because if you get the questions wrong, bad girl, stand in the corner. Everyone gets things wrong. What's a big deal? But we learn from our culture to take it as a personal failing. And we're so sort of tense and anxious about making mistakes. We make even more. Just like I remember when I got my first bicycle when I was about 11 years of age. I remember just getting on it. I was so afraid of falling off, so anxious. I would actually hold those handlebars till my knuckles went white. My body was so stiff, and I kept falling off. Of course, because you're so stiff, you can't just move with the bike, you can't bend, when you go around corners. You can't sort of adapt. You're too tight and stiff. And then I learned that's not the way to ride a bicycle. Soon you forgot about, falling off. And then you never did fall off. I learned from that, what I feared, you make happen. So, in the end, you just learn how to allow mistakes to happen. They were cool, they were fun. And I make lots and lots and lots of mistakes. And I love telling people about the mistakes I make in life because they're fun. So you don't tell people about all the wonderful things you do, all the mistakes you make. They're much more fun. So, when you understand, you just be yourself, whatever that happens to be. Instead of trying to be someone you never can be, you can't be. Be your tree in the forest. And understand, all trees belong. And that stops that tension, that tightness. Which if, you keep on keeping that tightness, does come into, the strong anxieties, the old panic attacks. It's coming, it's built up over several years. Trying to be perfect, trying to please other people. Tightness and tension which gets into your body and then into your mind. One nice thing is meditation. Sometimes you can get to really be sensitive to your body. So sensitive. Many people say this, and I think I agree with this, many of the emotional scars of life, the difficulties, the stuff which you suppress because you're not allowed to actually to feel at the time. You've got to be an Australian, you've got to be tough. English young men have to have a stiff upper lip. Whatever it is, you're not supposed to be this, you're not supposed to be that. It gets stored up in your body. And when you're really mindful and aware of your body, and you learn how to be kind, it lets go, it releases. And you learn how to relax your own body, which is a brilliant thing to do. That's one, again, the reasons. I don't know if you saw the live feed or the recording of the conference in Toronto. there's one of the really dozens of top guys from Stanford and from Columbia and from Serpentine. And the fellow I really liked there is the local professor at University of Toronto. He's a good mate now, and he was actually saying, "Well, come on, look at this mindfulness business. You've got to be very careful." He's read through the whole lot. He's a professor, and he said, "You know, don't give it too much importance, because sometimes people are pushing a wheelbarrow there." And being in that industry, I was really pleased to hear that. But he said, you've got to go into other areas as well, such as just the kindness, because when you're aware and you're kind, it's amazing how you can relax your own body. And I've been trying to, I do that personally whenever I get into trouble, just, you know, like I'm really tired, exhausted, jet lagged, find out where it is, just don't try and get rid of it, be with it, and be kind to it. Really be kind to it. Let it be. Don't fight it. And then it just eases off. Do that oftentimes when you have colds. Like when I was in South Korea and minus 15 degrees out in the snow, and I had to appear on live TV sneezing. Now that is not a good look.
It's not schools.
Yes, not schools, yeah. Right on the camera. Or on. It's amazing, just these people who interview you, they are totally coiffed and everything, and just, you know, one little hair in place, they have to stop and just put it back into place again. Ridiculous. I don't have that trouble. I never have a bad hair day. But anyway, not a new to guy. So I don't know why girls don't do that. Shave off all your hair and just get, you know, 3 or 4 weeks, and then you can just, you know, change every day, whatever you want to do. Anyway, I won't go there anymore. But where was I? Oh yeah, South Korea. There's a snotty nose on a camera in about 15 minutes. You don't try and get rid of it. You go right towards it, right into it. Just be with it. Be kind. Now is the most important time. The snot coming out of my nose was the most important object, because it was right there in front of me, you know, right in the front. And then being kind to it. And you can actually feel it relax. You can feel it open out and just dissipate. It's an amazing little thing to be able to learn. And then go on camera, there's no cold. You don't have to take all these chemicals and stuff, suppressants. You just, the mind and the body does it. Now the first place I learned this was as a student. I was always into, you know, not just science, but ghost hunting and psychic stuff, and hypnosis especially. And hypnosis, I saw this experiment, I often quote it, it's just so obvious, that they took this guy, put him under hypnosis, and they got a stick with a 4-inch nail on it, and they hypnotized this man to believe it was red hot. No, red hot. It was only the cool temperature. And they touched it on his skin. And he screamed in pain. That was to be expected. But what I'd never expected was to see a blister come up.
Oh.
The blister actually appeared. And the reason is because the mind has that effect on the body. You can actually make a blister if you under hypnosis. 100% believe it. Now, when I saw that, I said, wow, this human mind does have an effect on this body, physical effect. If you can use it to create a blister, why can't you use it to just take away a cold, snot coming out of your nose? Or what I did, you've heard the story too many times, food poisoning. It's gone, 20 minutes, without going to see a doctor. Or like this lady over in East Europe, which I'm really proud of, arthritis. That's a big thing, really bad chronic arthritis. And that's really what I want to really get into with trying to get some more acceptance on the fact that your attitude towards your body has a huge effect on it. I think you all understand that, but sometimes we don't take that as far as we really could. So because of that, a famous story with anxiety, which I've talked to you many times before, but again it works. I think it's on the second book, The Good Bad Who Knows book. I don't mind saying who she is, Jippy her name is. She comes to our temple every now and again with her two beautiful kids and her husband, Lloyd. They were in Adelaide University and she was studying dentistry and really bad chronic anxiety. So bad she had to stay in her room. She couldn't get out. She was so scared of even going out of her room. So she couldn't go to her studies. And, you know, in Australian universities, you have social workers, psychologists, psychiatrists for free. No one could help her. So to her rescue came the, I'm going to say the bald W-A-N-K-E-R, but I shouldn't say that, should I?
Wanker.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Not personally, but you know, her uncle, you know, was a supporter. So they said, oh, I'm going out of your room. So she called me. Say, yeah, what's the problem? I said, I can't even get out of my room. Making a phone call is easy, you don't have to go anywhere. And you can always put the phone down because, you know, it wasn't sort of so confronting rather than the person in front of you. So I said, what is the problem? And she told me everything. And I said, okay, what I want you to do is to describe to me where, I don't know, what it feels like physically when you have an anxiety attack. Describe it to me. She said, well, it's just anxious, I'm afraid. Not good enough, I said. Three days' time, give me a call again. I want a description, a real description. So, number one, I was giving her something to do, to take control over her therapy, rather than always believing these people in the white coats, the experts. Take some control over it. And, just like that person who went to the bookshop and asked the person at the counter, where's the self-help section? And the person at the counter said, if I told you, it would defeat the purpose. So anyone who wants a self-help book, write it yourself. So we've got to take control instead of depending on others. So anyway, so...
Back to Adelaide.
Adelaide, yeah, thank you very much. I need help.
Write it yourself.
Yeah. Anyway, she went to that. Anyway, so 3 days later, she called me up, and she gave a really nice, she's a brilliant woman. She gave me a really good description of how it felt, you know, all the different pains and tensions and tightnesses, and just how it develops over an anxiety attack. She really got to know it. That's called mindfulness. Being aware enough to describe it to somebody else. So, you know what, anyone who's a doctor, if you've got a problem and you go to the doctor and say, how does it feel? It hurts. Yeah, thanks a lot. That doesn't really tell him much. That's why you have to have all these MRI scans and stuff to get something your doctors can work on. So, it hurts. And she gave a big description. And I was really quite impressed. She said, exactly where is it located? So it was just in my chest somewhere. Not good enough. I want coordinates. So she did that. 3 days later, she gave me, well, it starts just about 3 inches above my belly button, my navel, about 2 inches to the right over there, or something like that. And, you know, it's about this big, and then it gets smaller, or whatever. Again, it was more exercise in really getting to know the physical feelings of an anxiety attack. Because it's something which I've learned, which everyone should know. Every emotion has a corresponding physical feeling in your body. If you're angry, it has a feeling somewhere. If you're in love, if you're excited, if you really actually investigate, you can find it. It's a different feeling, different sensations, different locations in the body. So working on that, she got to know the location, she got to know the feeling. The next stage is she had Lloyd, her live-in boyfriend, washing for her, cooking for her. Now, if you ever find a boy like that, get a ring on him as soon as you can. It was amazing. So anyway, I said, when you have a anxiety attack like that, that feeling, get your hand and massage it really nicely. As much kindness as you possibly can, as much compassion. And if you can't do it, get your boyfriend to do that. It's amazing. He was always very happy to massage his girlfriend's chest. So anyway, she did that. 3 days later, I asked her to phone again. And what happened? He said, oh, just when he massaged or I massaged it, the tension in my chest went away. It disappeared. And that was the next question was, I call it the light bulb moment, the eureka moment. So what happened to your anxiety? And she paused. I always remember that pause. It's just that pause when you actually get it, you understand. She said the anxiety went away as well. Great, now you know what to do. And I hung up, and a couple of weeks later, she was out of bed. And about a year later, 2 years later, I performed the marriage for her in Sunken Gardens with Lloyd and her, Jippy and Lloyd. And now they've got two beautiful children. She completed her dentist degree, she's a specialist somewhere. And you know what happened? She was so impressed. She nominated me for Australian of the Year. I never got it. But just a gentle sweet. But to me, just doing the marriage for them and seeing them, just so happy together. And that was like a nice story about how anxiety or fear or anger, whatever is a problem, you think it's a problem, it does have something in your body, a feeling there somewhere. And try to get rid of it mentally, emotionally. Most people just can't do it. It makes it worse. I shouldn't be angry. It makes you more angry. So instead, find it in your body and just have a nice massage. So talking about massaging the body, that when it was Chinese New Year, I think last year, you probably know this tradition, there I was just happened to be standing by the door at Mala Mala, and this Chinese lady looked at me, and before I could stop her, she massaged my tummy for good luck. Now I know how to make a fundraiser, because many people they shave their hair for cancer treatment.
Yeah.
Yeah, so shave your hair. But I've offered to do that, but people won't sponsor me for that. So I thought I could stand outside the cancer clinic and just $10 a minute. Okay, I've talked enough and we're over time. So, as usual. But I won't charge you extra today. We're over time.
Thank you, Ajahn Brown.